Hello, horror fans. Welcome to Selling the Scream, a show about horror movies brought to you by one horror nerd and one horror noob. I'm Jed Donaldson, the aforementioned noob. Leaving me with my co-host and our horror nerd, Josh Salt Bay Yoakum. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. You're awful salty yourself today. I'll
try.
How are you?
Fine. I feel like I never have anything to add to this because nothing ever happens in my life. I'm at home. I'm running the kids to and from school. They don't really do any activities so much. So I just kind of don't do anything. And that's not a great story to tell.
Go ahead. I was going to say, if you had any like Secret Life of Walter Mitty type fantasies, you could project upon your boring day to day world.
My fantasies are the exact same life, but with more money.
So, but with like a cool drink in one hand.
Yeah, I'm wearing sunglasses. Everything else is exactly the same.
But recently.
I've been looking for a new job. Been kind of out of the market for a little while. I left my old place of business and helped my wife with the store that we purchased. I say we, but I didn't do anything. But it's still like we're together in it. So, I mean, it's we, right?
It's the marriage cheat.
Yeah.
It's our accomplishments.
Even though I don't do anything there. I don't know. I worked there for a little bit, but it's kind of a slow season for the cake and candy business, and it just feels like we don't need all our eggs in one basket. So I'm trying to find a new place to work, and I don't want to. So I got that going for me.
I mean, what are you applying for now? Like race car driver?
I'm trying to find a job that lets me do exactly what I do now, but wearing sunglasses.
Well, you know, you do have your lucrative podcasting to fall back on.
Right, yeah, it's raking it in. I don't even know why we're looking for another job. I don't know why I bought the store.
Yeah, all that. We actually pay mattress companies not to advertise with us. That's our secret. They keep one. They're like, if we advertise with them, it would destroy us. And I say, well, I'm going to recommend you if you don't pay us. So.
I mean,
breaking it in.
That's the secret, right? You're always angry.
Yeah, I mean, certainly good luck on that. You got all kinds of skills, such as, and I'll leave the ellipses there for the listener to fill in.
You just want to throw the Napoleon Dynamite, get nunchuck skills.
I've been out here in Portland, crazy like summer concert schedule stuff's coming up, and like every time a show pops up, I'm just like, oh, that looks exciting. I wonder if I'm free on that day, and maybe if I have the money to buy. Oh, it's sold out. Well, there's this thing. This is this. And then I don't know if you've tried to buy like concert or show tickets in recent years when they like immediately go to the resellers and it's like, who's this reseller? Oh, it appears to be the company that sells the tickets. StubHub is the reseller, but now it's more money.
I mean, that's how they make money. I could also say that the problem is that you're trying to see things that are too mainstream. You gotta like things that are off the beaten path, like me, that no one else wants to go see.
Like Coldplay.
Exactly, yeah. That up a
cover. Well, that's the thing here is it's like it's Portland. It's like, unfortunately, this I live in a cool town, so people know about cool shit and they go to go see it. But God damn it! I guess that's why all the cool things come here.
Yeah,
people will pay to see them.
It's a real heartbreaker for you.
It's like a show I really wanted to go see like a couple weeks ago, and like this is maybe where it's like getting old. Well, first of all, like the show is at 9 p.m. for a punk show, and I'm just like, let's talk. Let's talk about Seven. What's does Seven work for y'all?
Can we do a matinee? A punk matinee?
Let's wrap this up by five, like just like 30 minutes. Let's in and out the door.
And can you turn it down just a smidge?
Bring some chairs in here. But yeah, I still was wanting to go see it, and my kid got a cold that like it was just him coughing for like 4 hours one day, and but then the cold got to me and like achieved its final form and was just laid out by it, and like, well, I don't want to go to like a punk show and be like old, out of shape, and coughing in the back.
What's more punk than that?
But do we talk about going to punk shows here?
We do not. In fact, we talk about horror movies, specifically ones that Josh here has put together in a list in an attempt to turn me into a fan of the genre. I guess it's been working because we're still doing it. Thoughts?
I mean, yeah, I'm sitting at that comfortable, not quite a C plus, but on the higher end of a regular C. It's feeling pretty good. Pretty good. I got through college, man.
I got through high school like that.
Yeah, we are doing kind of a do over. We were gonna do this one year two of the show before it was not really available, but it's kind of a cult movie. People were clamoring for it, so we're doing 2009's Jennifer's Body.
Oh yeah, I do remember wanting to do this before and not being able to because it just was not able to be found anywhere.
Yeah, and we'll get to our next movie because not being able to be found anywhere was also a problem with that one too.
I mean, it makes it a little more difficult for our audience to catch up and watch along with us, but I don't know. I think we're worth it.
Yeah, no, I'll be a little snooty here and you know, spoiler for the next one. I think if you don't already own it, you probably should. You can find it for a reasonable sum. For a physical copy, but
often in bins of mixed DVDs at Walmart.
But this time we are doing Jennifer's Body, which was the kind of famous flop, a movie that did not do well when it was released, kind of sank Karin Kusama's career for a while, and it's kind of just in more recent years that it's gotten a bit of a reappraisal, and especially kind of in the wake of Me Too and a little bit more of a reckoning for female-centered movies coming out of Hollywood studio systems. And mm-hmm. I think it's one worth revisiting here with two dudes talking through it.
No one better qualified, honestly.
Well, I mean, for like an academic approach, right? Like a real serious,
right, minded, no. Yeah. Official. Well, you don't want a girl in here talking about it. What do they know?
But I don't want to like rehash the Karin Kusama stuff because we instead of doing Jennifer's Body, we did The Invitation. I invite people to check out that episode because I make fun of our own show a lot, but there are a few episodes I'm like kind of proud of, and I think that one came together really well. So
that one did. It also had a little bit of a tumultuous background getting started. We had some personal stuff that made it difficult for us to actually talk about this movie, or that movie, I should say.
Yeah. So pitch people to check that one out. Check out other stuff in our back catalog. Download as many times as you please. Listen to it again.
Yeah, why not?
But I want to catch up a little bit with her. So kind of just the short of it is that she had a breakout indie hit with Girl Fights. She gets the major studio debut film for her is Aeon Flux. That movie's kind of taken away from her, and it's not what she wants it to be. And she walks away in disgust for years and is getting iced out of things that she is interested in. And this was kind of her comeback in a way. And like, she got attached to it. It's kind of as Diablo Cody, who I want to get into a little bit, was like really kind of picking up steam and getting like a lot of buzz.
She was a Hollywood it girl there for a minute. I mean, not like an it girl doing like writing and stuff, not on screen.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll get to a different kind of Hollywood it girl here in a minute too.
Mm-hmm.
But she made this movie. She's really proud of it. It's not quite an Aeon Flux situation where like the movie that was released was like something she wanted to have her name taken off of. She's genuinely proud of this movie, but it bombed and it kind of tanked her until she started doing indie stuff. Since we did the invitation episode though, she's an executive producer and directed the pilot for Yellow Jackets. Huge hit show for Showtime. Really,
that's
pretty amazing season like one.
Kind of the all female Lost sort of thing.
Yeah, with like Christina Ricci and Juliet Lewis and Melanie Lynskey and a really great young cast too. Yeah, it's phenomenal. And she also, on a more unfortunate note, she was greenlit and like just about ready to begin production on a modern version of Dracula centered more around Mina Harker, but like set in modern times. And like days before they were going to start filming it, like the studio got nervous about Renfield coming out, like, and there being too many Dracula movies and yanked the rug out from underneath her. So Karin Kusama gets fucked again.
I mean, you say too many Draculas, but can there really be too many Draculas?
I mean, we have like what, 13, 14 of them?
I am interested in what like a modern day take would be like. Would it be like that Romeo and Juliet that came out with Leonardo DiCaprio in it?
Where they keep all the language from the book, but it's
right. Like... Yeah. Exactly.
Let's back up a little bit to Diablo Cody. Because she got a lot of scripts greenlighted and like put into production. Based off of her writing her memoir. She had a blog. She got her start as a very early blogger. She found herself in an unexpected career as a stripper and like kept a blog of just kind of her weird encounters, wrote her memoir about it. And like that memoir got passed around by all the people who like are on the lookout for such things. And she got a ton of buzz. This script kind of went into development around the same time like Juno is going into development, but Juno comes out before this.
Okay.
So she wins her Oscar for doing Juno. And this movie is like kind of starts out hyped to hell. And then like they start to get real scared about what they have as they actually make Jennifer's body. Part of that is that culture at large didn't really know what to do with Megan Fox, our star of this movie. I don't think we've done a movie yet where there was an actress that was kind of like as much of a tabloid sensation and like hot girl as Megan Fox.
Right.
We've done movies with exceptionally attractive people, but I don't think they were like, you know, four Maxim covers in a row. So like the culture at large kind of went like bananas for her for like a year or so. Like, you know, she's still very famous. She's still like, you know, I'm gonna give a lot of defense of Megan Fox here, but like being famous for dating Machine Gun Kelly is kind of a
was this like pre or post the Michael Bay stuff?
This is just after that. This is, I believe, this comes out before this. It's maybe like right around the second Transformers movie. It's before the one that she doesn't go back to. So I think, I forget if it was released first, but I think it was made. So like, and as somebody who like hates those movies,
oh God, like
she's really good in those. Like she pops, like she understands the assignment, and like
she definitely has a lot. I think she pops in this movie too.
Oh yeah, no, I think she's got you know, whether or not like Megan Fox is your type, if you're attracted to such a thing, like it is undeniable that she has like an it factor, that she has just a ton of charisma. And I think like she's really playing with that a lot in this part, and I think like he is very aware of like her media image as like I don't know if you remember just reading articles about like this. So maybe like the tail end of like when people were writing really shitty things about Britney Spears all the time, and just right. Like kind of the culture at large was just like every article, like interview you'd read is just like, oh, she comes off like she's like your girlfriend or something, like effortlessly charming, blah blah blah. Or like it was the height of TMZ power, people trying to get like tabloid and candid shit all the time. And then people turned on her for speaking out about Michael Bay, like yeah. Who was a piece of shit to her.
But yeah, like, I think she gets kind of a bad rap because her whole career kind of started because she was basically famous for being hot. Yeah. But I think she's more talented than that. I think like she deserves better than that.
Yeah, and she's had like, you know, she doesn't act all the time anymore, but like she had like a role in The New Girl that was like a really good run and like a season as like a recurring character. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is talented, and I think like the thing that kind of sucked about how she was treated and kind of how this movie was reviewed too is that I think at the time like there wasn't a lot of sympathy for her plight from people who otherwise maybe should know better because of like the kind of hot she is. Like there was a lot of resentment from like, you know, progressive voices and feminist voices because of like the image that she has.
Right. I think kind of the project she was attached with kind of gave her a reputation that unfairly painted her in a certain light.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think this movie has a lot of fun with that. And like, she wasn't initially who they wrote the film for. Diablo Cody, like, you know, had an idea in mind of like an alpha hot girl at a school. And I think like the moment Megan Fox's name came up, it was just, oh yeah, of course. you know, there was not a lot of thought behind that one as opposed to some of the other parts that they like auditioned for and found the right people for.
Right.
So that kind of leads us to like how this movie was sold to audiences, which the audience that Diablo Cody and Karin Kusama envisioned for this movie was teenage girls. They envisioned this as being like the Diablo Cody's exact words is the Lost Boys, like, but for girls instead of boys, which like,
yeah,
we can maybe really get into why it's also like the Lost Boys. This is a very queer movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sometimes more direct than others.
But the studio wanted to capitalize on having Megan Fox in a movie and just started marketing it towards teenage boys, and then teenage boys would see the actual movie and like turn in comments like more boobs. And Diablo Cody, who's like sitting on test screenings, is just like, well, this thing's gonna fail. Sorry, everyone.
I mean, if you're marketing as something it isn't and trying to grab an audience that it's not really intended for, I can't imagine how that could be a failure.
Yeah, because the trailers really play up the kiss that she has with Amanda Seyfried, and like the line that she has at like the end fight, the I go Hold both up. Ways.
Yeah.
It puts those front and center with like basically just as many near naked Megan Fox shots as they could squeeze into the trailer.
I was actually surprised there. I mean, maybe this speaks poorly of me, but I was surprised at how little skin there actually is in this movie.
Yeah, and I think it's really, even though she's like, you know, a straight male, you know, fantasy girl or whatever, and then they shoot her such, like, I don't think this is really male gazey. I think it's really consciously by Karin Kusama and Diablo Cody, like, kind of like, they're less interested in why men are attracted to her than like, why is Needy friends with her? What's Needy getting into this?
Right. Like, no, I think that's fair. It definitely, I mean, looking back, it definitely does not seem male gazy, like you said. I think it's more like, yeah, she's hot. We know she's hot, but we don't have to linger on that other than when it's necessary for what's happening in the story.
Yeah. I think one other thing I just want to talk about before we, you know, kind of dive a bit more beat by beat into this is this, and like, speaking of like movies aimed at teen girls, like this and the Twilight movies are kind of like the last bastion of the rock soundtrack. Like that's the thing you don't really hear. Like this movie just is like a jukebox movie. There's like 20 something period songs that play during the course of this thing.
Yeah.
And like a 90s song or two.
Right. I don't know when exactly it stopped. Like I couldn't put my finger on like a year, but I remember, you know, you would buy movie soundtracks because they'd have like awesome songs on them.
The thing I remember like being kind of hilarious would be like the ones like Mortal Kombat, where it was like, there was the soundtrack, and then like a couple months later, the soundtrack would be so fucking huge that there'd be like music inspired by Mortal Kombat. And I'm like, I don't know if Seven Dust like sat down and watched Mortal Kombat and were like, guys, like,
fuck yeah, get over here.
We gotta write a song for this thing. But it's weird that it's kind of like I guess as the music industry, I shouldn't say died, but sort of like changed how it was marketed and being like more singles focused, and kind of the rise of
it evolved.
Like, yeah, but they're like, I mean, the only other movie I can really think of like in recent years, it's not a rock soundtrack, but has like a really prominent, like full of hits soundtrack that came out around, that's not like a musical, is the Into the Spider-Verse. Like that's.
Right.
Yeah. I can't really think of too many other ones that are like.
It's not a thing that they do really anymore.
Yeah, it's a weird little vestige of that. And I think there's some real like, there's stuff in here that wasn't exactly my scene. Some of the screamo bands of the 2009-ish era, but like
Fall Out
Boy. Kind of genuine. I don't hate Fall Out Boy, but the White Lies song on here is really good. It's got Florence and the Machine. It's got it feels like every time I praise Hole, it feels like that whole like worst person in the world makes a great point. But like Hole has like some pretty good songs.
I like a lot of Hole stuff. I mean, there's there's stuff to unpack there too, but. They make quality tunes.
Yeah, so we talked about this stuff. Let's dive into the movie. We open up real strong with Tony Little riding as his gazelle.
As you do.
There is an extended cut of this movie, like a director's cut, and one of the things it does is it takes out this kind of prologue, the you'll never believe how I got here. It just starts with her in the asylum telling the story instead of like this in media res Jennifer in bed, Megan Fox in bed, and her best friend Needy Lesnicki outside her window, and it's like positioning Needy to be the monster, kind of, and then...
Yeah, you definitely get the horror movie camera going with her stalking up to the window.
Yeah. But kind of our real intro to this movie is Amanda Seyfried's Needy in a mental institution as, like, the most dangerous and like only young person.
She's a kicker. All like
K-I-C-K-E-R says so on our chart. Attacking someone for daring to suggest that she eat something more than other Pop-Tart. Than
Pop-Tarts. A single Pop-Tart for lunch. I like this entrance scene because I didn't know what was going on. Like, it was like what am I in for with this movie? I don't know what's happening. Stuff.
Yeah. And her getting tossed in lockup. And there's also like the whole thing about her like fan letters that she's like getting, which seems weird, I think, knowing what the public would know about, like, that she's basically just a teenage girl who killed her best friend. Like, it's kind of what you come to find out. You know, there's more of the story than that, but like it's people like trying to save her soul. And what'd you think of kind of the, I mean, you've seen Juno, right?
It's been a long time.
I said that really presumptuously.
Of course. Duh. No, it's been a long time. I have seen, I mean, I did work in a movie store for a long time.
Yeah.
At the time that these movies were coming out. So there, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I watched. Juno is one of them. I don't recall Juno being bad. I don't have a lot of strong feelings about it. I thought it was fine, I guess.
I mean, what I was just kind of getting at was sort of the Diablo Cody dialogue. I was wondering how you felt about the Heathersness of it all.
I don't like it. This is this is like trying to do a Clueless or a Mean Girls, but I don't think it lands.
They don't make fetch happen?
No, not at all.
it's a tricky thing, and I feel like what they're trying to capture there is that, like, that sensation that when you, like, know somebody who's sort of like the center of your friend group, mm-hmm. that without even meaning to, like, the way they talk starts to kind of like ingratiate itself into your speech patterns. Like, I don't know if you've had that sensation before. I've like caught myself.
I think that's a pretty universal experience. I mean, unless you are that person who's at the center of your friend group, in which case, fuck you.
You made me talk like this. I didn't get into a good school because of
it. Yeah, I got some issues, all right?
Yes. she's in this mental institution, and she gets tossed into solitary confinement. Had some Nightmare on Elm Street 3 flashbacks here. Good old Kincaid singing Ain't Gonna Dream No More. And they start playing some soothing music to help her calm down. And she hates this song. And they just start playing Use Somebody. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. It's Through the Trees by the band Low Shoulder. Not Use Somebody by Kings of Leon. Different intentionally, I assume intentionally shitty band. I have to assume they're doing that on purpose, right?
I mean, they could have been playing Your Sex Is on Fire.
I think this song succeeds pretty well. Like, I definitely think I buy this Through the Trees song as a song that, like, I would hear once or twice and be like, oh, that's pretty catchy. And then, like, by the seventh time I heard it, I'd be like, why is this being played all the time? Why? Yeah. Please make this stop.
It definitely sounds like the type of song they want it to sound like.
Yeah, where you're just like, it. Everyone, this is what everyone else is into, huh?
I don't know what that's like. I was always on the cutting edge of what was popular and hip.
I was into American Idol right when everyone else was into American Idol.
For exactly as long as everyone else was into it.
I agree that Game of Thrones was really good, and then it got bad when it got bad.
And you know when that was.
This band Low Shoulder, it was initially going to be Soft Shoulder. This song is written by a real band called Test Your Reflex, and they like the other dudes who aren't Adam Brody. I think at least two of them are the guys from that other band. So, you know, sure. Kicking them something.
Why not? Throw them a bone.
So we get a little backstory here. We get that the in media res of our in media res is finally taken the back. That you may be wondering how I found myself here after a record scratch.
Record scratch.
She's from a town called Devil's Kettle, which is sort of based on a real natural phenomenon. They filmed it in Minnesota, at least this location. A lot of it's in Vancouver.
I've read about this whirlpool that goes to nowhere.
Yeah, it's like it goes into a glacier. They alter kind of the look of it a bit for the movie. Yeah. I think for your women-led horror film, this idea. This metaphor for maybe like a feminine mystique kind of works a little bit, right? It's a little Freudian, but it kind of gets there.
Honestly, until you just said it now, didn't make the connection. I'm right there with you right now, though. I want to fuck that waterfall. Whirlpool. Fuck.
Not the water. I don't do waterfalls and whirlpools. I did once in college. I tried it out. Wasn't for me, but it's okay if you're into waterfalls. Don't go chasing them.
Man.
There are two wolves inside you. So before we're given some background for Needy and Jennifer. They are high school friends who have been friends since the sandbox. Jennifer is the Megan Foxiest person at her school. She's the cheerleader captain. She's like the it girl of high school, the coolest person in town.
Right. Future Megan Fox.
Yeah. She's playing your idea of Megan Fox. Right. With your being the audience, not just yours. No. But
she nails it on both counts.
Yeah. One thing I really do like about I think this Needy Amanda Seyfried's character was written to be like more of a pariah, more of like an outsider who like, oh, who's like, why is Jennifer friends with this person? And there's still some of that, but she's just like a good kid. She's just like, she's not like unpopular. She's
definitely in the vein of a she's all that type of girl.
Yeah. Like, but
they don't put her on the outside as much as that. But I mean, that's as far as they go to kind of give you that impression, is they make her wear glasses and put her hair in a ponytail and dress preppy.
Yeah. And like, of course, it's, you know, I wouldn't even say Hollywood ugly, because I don't think she's supposed to be like ugly. She's just not. She's not Megan Fox.
Yeah. She's not the popular girl.
Yeah, she's got a boyfriend who loves her. The let's talk about the names in this movie for a second, because you got Chip Dove as like the kind of clueless good boyfriend, and yeah. Then Needy Les is one of our leads.
All right, again, until you say it, I didn't see it.
I guess the Jennifer check thing was a script writing thing where it was just she was putting a check by when Jennifer would show up in the script before she came up with a last name. It was just like, well, so, you know, they don't have a lot in common other than this, like, they've been best friends since a really early age.
Right. They've known each other since the sandbox.
I think one of the things that this movie you know, again, it's really where it's pitched is at teenage girls, because it's like there's a lot of dynamics in their friendship that they really explore, that how they relate to each other and kind of what they each get out of their relationship. Like Jennifer is a lot and Needy's there for all of it, but like Needy also needs, like Jennifer needs like the validation from Needy too. She needs like the the reassurance and the safety and the like,
she needs someone to say, man, you're a lot and I'm here for all of it.
what's up Vagisil, what's up Monistat?
The type of friends I wish I had in high school.
But I think there's something to be said about like the types of friendships that women have versus like the types of friendship that men have, because I mean, there's been times where like I've been talking to you or other like dude friends, hanging out for like 10 hours of the day, and I come home and my partner will be like, oh, hey, what's going on with them? And I'll be like, oh, I think, you know, I think someone in their family's sick. And it's like, well, how do they feel about it? I don't know. It's like, we didn't ask any follow-ups. It was just.
Yeah, I saw something the other day is basically guys make like 6 friends in high school and that's enough. Social quota reached.
It's like, oh, well, do you talk about like your plans and dreams and your feelings? Like, well, we mostly just say things from The Simpsons. That's and play video games.
We do some quotes. Sometimes we make fun of each other. I guess when things are really serious, we'll say like this bad thing happened, and that's enough.
Messed up, man.
Sucks.
This like dynamic here, there's just like there Jennifer asks Needy to go to a concert with her, and like when Needy puts up any resistance, just like flexes her eyes at her, just gives her a little squeeze of the old peepers. And Needy's in.
That works for me.
Before letting us know that her mom is going out on a date tonight with the guy who owns the ham store. He seems nice. He does seem nice. I know, like, did any of the jokes land, even if the, because this is a horror comedy. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Diablo Cody-ness of it, even if the exact dialogue didn't land, were there jokes that got you? Were there, like, funny bits?
No. I really
just final judgments.
It's hard for me to describe to articulate how little I cared about the dialogue in this movie.
Okay. I think there's some cleverness to it. I think there's also like the some of the choices of like shots and stuff here. Like, there's like interesting framing and visual things too. But let's talk about the show that they're going to go to. They go to see Low Shoulder, a band from the city, at this club that's not really a club. It's like a redneck bar out in the middle of nowhere. There's no real reason for Snow Patrol. I mean, I'm sorry, Yellow Card. I mean, I'm sorry, Low Shoulder to be playing out there. And we're introduced to like some characters in this town that, boy, did you think some of these folks were going to be in this movie for longer than they were?
No, I did not expect to see Mario.
I'm gonna win. Chris
Pratt making an appearance.
As being the guy who took Jennifer's backdoor virginity.
Yeah,
that's an image.
He's underutilized.
I forgot he was in this because I saw this like kind of before I started watching like Parks and Rec or whatever, and I'm just like, oh yeah, he's in this. I'm like, am I just forgetting all the parts with him in it? Like, oh no, I'm not. I'm not forgetting all the parts with him
in it. He's in this part.
He's a you know, one of the guys in town who's infatuated with Jennifer, an older dude who's like in the academy to be a cop, who's like snatching cigarettes out of her mouth and giving her a hard time so, you know, he can get back with her. We had our cameo here from Diablo Cody. She's the bartender who, you know, that Megan Fox goes to go play Hello Titty with. Let's talk a little bit about Low Shoulder here. I've made fun of them a bit, and we've talked about like the song, but like this 2009 vibe, this guy's an eyeliner vibe they got going on.
I mean, they went for a specific type of band, and I think they hit all the notes pretty much exactly like you want them to. I mean, not that you want them to, but they did it.
You want them to hit less notes, I do. Adam Brody was kind of best known for being on the OC at the time, which is like part of how like a lot of indie bands broke back in the day. That's how like people heard of Death Cab for Cutie and stuff, and right, some of these Snow Patrol type bands. I think he has like a real fun time playing Nikolai, the lead singer of this band. He gets most of the dialogues. I think he's like the actor in the group.
No, I think you were talking about, you know, jokes and dialogue and stuff before. I think he has my favorite bit when they actually show what happened to Jennifer when she goes off with them. His whole thing with her and with the rest of his band while they're doing what they're doing to her, I think is really fun. I think that's probably my favorite part of the movie, is that I think it's really funny.
Yeah, and it's like, I do want to talk about that scene, because I think the juxtaposition is pretty crazy in that scene. Yeah. He's this, you know, they're this band from the city that like likes to come out and play for the shittier fans, the fans that live in shitty places.
The fans in the shitty places. They deserve good music too.
Jennifer is flirting with him. He's extra salty. And like, I think there's also like that bit of their relationship building too, where it's like, Needy's got to look like hot enough, like she could hang out with Jennifer, but can't look too hot so that people are distracted from Jennifer. She can't show cleavage
because that's Jennifer's thing.
They have the 9/11 shots. There's definitely some 2000s political stuff in this movie. Amy Sedaris's character in particular.
Right, yeah.
9/11 shots that are red, white, and blue, but you got to drink them real fast or they'll turn brown. There's a split diopter shot here. There's a little carry shot where Needy overhears the band discussing Jennifer and whether or not she's a virgin or not. And like, there's that fun juxtaposition of like, Needy's assumption is like, oh, they think my friend is like, you know, is a slut that they could use. So she runs to her defense and is like, yeah, she is a virgin. But they're actually, it's a band of mediocre Satanists
who look up their rituals online
and want to find a virgin for their sacrifice. Fire engulfs the bar. Kills most of the characters we just met here.
This is a wild scene, and I'm not sure that it needed to happen, but I guess I was entertained.
A real Great White situation breaks out, and this bar burns down while they're like, Adam Brody's just shrugging it off. Shows up outside with a drink, as most of the people inside
are on fire. some pretty visceral sound effects of a lady getting trampled, which is I did not expect that in this movie.
You guess Diablo Cody wanted to do the live burn, and they're like, we're not gonna let you do that. You are not a stunt person. She's like, but like Burt Reynolds did it, and like Burt Reynolds was like injured for months because he did a live burn.
Yeah, not a great convincing argument there. But honestly, she's only being the bartender. She already wrote the damn thing. Well, just let her do the stunt.
Let her do the stunt.
Start that chant now and see if it works.
I think one of my favorite bits here is that, like, they get out and the band's already outside. They're by their, like, creepy tour van. And Nikolai is just, Jennifer's either, like, captivated by them or in shock. This is never really,
she part almost,
is not really clear whether it's magic almost or
like she's just under a spell.
Yeah. And it's like, you need to go someplace safe. Like, I don't know, my van.
Safe and familiar. Like, and I think that's my van.
And then she pushes her drink towards her mouth. Yeah. Here you go.
He's very bopping through this kind of scene, this carnage, like he doesn't have a care in the world.
Yeah. And Needy is left as Jen just decides she's going to get in the van and go away. She finally is able to make it home. And after she makes it home and tells Chip about, wow, crazy, I was just in this place where a lot of people just burned to death. And I don't know where Jennifer is.
It's weird to me because, like, a central part of the story is how bad this event is. And then, like, the murders that follow, like, how tragic all this stuff is and how it really affected this small town. And you don't see hardly any of that. You're just, like, told that it was bad and people didn't like it.
Jonas has the meltdown, but I think one of the commentaries is trying to make, and I think, you know, this movie has a lot in common with Ginger Snaps, another episode y'all can go listen to, is that a lot of the concern and sadness is kind of performative.
Sure.
It's like I think, like, the first, in the immediate wake of it, all the other people in the school, there's a reason they're juxtaposing, like, how not into it Jennifer is, because it's, like, ghoulish, like, yeah, the day after. But when people are being, like, performative about it, like, 2 months down the line, like, there's also kind of that part that I think the movie's a little being a bit of a dark comedy about, like, the wrap it up. Yes. We're done talking about this.
Move on.
MoveOn.org. Come on, there's good dialogue in this movie. So Jennifer comes back looking a mess and tears into a rotisserie chicken.
Honestly, dude, when they're trying to make Megan Fox look, like, scary, that stuff really worked for me. I think she does a great job, like, in the makeup and everything. I think she does a great job of looking just freaky as hell.
Barfing up Hershey's syrup,
the bloody teeth when she smiles. I think all of that stuff is really good.
Yeah, no, it she pops in all of it. She kind of, like, attacks Needy but pulls back, and looks an absolute mess. And I think a lot of this stuff too, like, also probably plays in for, like, I think the terror here is, like, it's not really a sexual assault what happens to her in between this that we find out in flashback later, but it's
we don't know what happens to her at this point. We don't know what happened to her. We just know that she looks like a zombie.
Yeah, and but the movie treats it like that. The movie treats it like, oh, I just, like, my best friend is, like, in shambles and a mess, and, like, I don't know what's happening, and they're lashing out when I'm trying to help them. Like, I think a lot of that stuff for the intended audience, you know, they get it. They understand, like, what all this means. Mm-hmm. But in the plot of the movie, just the important thing is that the next day at school, as everything is getting canceled, and boy, J.K. Simmons.
He's a treasure.
Yeah, the you know, it's, I think this is very much a, oh, I'd like to offer you a small part in our movie. There are no small parts.
No, he definitely came into the trailer and said, all right, I know I'm only in this movie for like two or three scenes. I have some thoughts.
And my thoughts involve props.
Yeah, I he had to have brought his own stuff. They did not have like a hook hand in the makeup tent.
He applied his own Bob Ross wig.
Yeah.
What if you just played it as J. Jonah Jameson?
I'm here for it.
Pictures of Jennifer.
Jennifer's a menace.
He is phenomenal in this.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, very much playing the clueless, out of touch, trying to use the lingo student like this isn't about who's a hoe. And Jennifer is already bored by it. She's this you know, we can't let the fire win. The fire already won.
And this is the day after.
Yeah, day after this shit. Which, like, that's high school, right?
Yes.
I wasn't in high school when 9/11 happened. I have to imagine in classrooms all across the country, there was some shithead like me who was being shitty about it the next day. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's the teenage experience. We get a little bit more of Chip here, who young Neil himself.
Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah. Johnny Simmons, who's a nice and kind character, also like in a long tradition of horror movie boyfriends, a guy who just like doesn't listen. Here's the things that are happening. I mean, no, they're not happening.
If it wasn't for the fact that I was watching a horror movie, like, I'm on his side. That shit sounds crazy.
When women tell you that their friend is a demon from hell, listen to women, Chad. Yes.
All right.
Show up with a steak.
Right. Believe them. You're right. I don't want to get canceled.
We're introduced to a couple other high school students who are going to be Jennifer's victims in this movie. One of them is the guy who's taking the death of his football buddy who was hitting on Jennifer really hard.
You know who this guy reminded me of? You know who he reminded me of? Is Earl Sinclair. Earl Sinclair from Dinosaurs.
Yeah. I think if he had to pick between those, he'd probably take Sean. Can I please have Sean?
He looks like the animatronic dinosaur from the show Dinosaurs. I think
this episode might go long. I don't care. Whole fucking sidebar. Did you see the final episode of Dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Do you know how that show ends?
Yes. That show, there's no reason for it to have done that.
This is like the shit like today's youth doesn't understand, is that like when we were kids, they would take a beloved show that was going off the air, watched primarily by children, and kill off every character and all the dinosaurs. And
but Josh, that happened in real life. The dinosaurs died. I don't know necessarily that we needed to end with the extinction event, but
One more surreal dinosaurs bit, and then I swear to God, we'll get back to this movie. I'll try to go a little faster. There's an episode of Dinosaurs that's like their special drug episode. And
on special dinosaurs.
The son, the teenage son dinosaur, like, starts experimenting, and they pull the move where the episode ends and the dinosaur walks off set to give, like, hey, what you just watched was... as if the dinosaurs are making the show Dinosaurs. Had to make it, like, explain the special message to you.
It was a show that was ahead of its time.
Wild. However, our Sean Astin lookalike is sobbing before Jennifer gets him in her sights. But we're also introduced to another national treasure, Kyle Gulmer, who you might recognize from playing this character in every role that called for this character for 5 or 6 years. The sad emo boy, Kyle Gulmer. He's real good at it. And he's like, he's kept chugging along, and he's in Smile, which came out this year. Late last year. Tremendous in that. Like, he's kind of just made a career from it and plugged on. Like, good on him. But here he is like the he's one of the South Park goths, pretty much, right? Like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, yes, like, he is exactly one of the South Park goths.
No one is getting his wallet. It is it's so there. it will not be taken from him.
He's got chains and studs and leather and piercings and loose ties. Fingernail polish. You know, you got it.
I didn't notice the loose tie. Are you telling me that I missed someone Avril Lavigne-ing?
Oh, he was Avril Lavigne-ing, I think, when he goes actually on the date with Jennifer later on. I don't think he has it the first time we see him. He wanted to make it good.
Yeah, everyone wants a skater boy. So Jonas is this is a signature move of Jennifer's. I kind of want to talk a little bit about the somebody seeing her walking towards somebody and then appearing like not where she was coming from.
Yeah. This is the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the Lancelot scene where he's charging the castle.
But Jennifer singles out Jonas and tells him that, like, I was there at the fire with Chip. And you know what? One of the last things that he said was that you and I would make a banging couple.
It would be really cool if your penis was inside me.
I love that Jonas, through tears, is like, he said banging. Pretty great.
It's little things, man.
Jennifer takes him out into the woods.
I think Jonas kills it. A lot of pathos in that character.
I mean, you got to be a lot going through your head, like the day your best friend dies and Megan Fox wants to have sex with you.
I mean, the silver lining.
But then, like, they're out in the woods, and he's starting to ask questions about maybe why this is happening, and she says shutties.
Well, I mean, I think he really gets irritated by the or alarmed by the Disney princess level of animals that show up to watch.
Start gathering to watch what's gonna happen. I love that this is just like a one-off thing. Explanation for why it doesn't recur again. Just raccoons and deer and all manner of woodland creatures show up.
There's birds and rabbits. Yeah. Every woodland creature you can think of is there. I mean, if Megan Fox is getting naked.
She pushes him up against a tree and takes him apart. And when he's discovered later on,
you say later, but it's like it's 10 minutes
by our teacher J.K. Simmons, who just thinks he's like crying at first. He's like, oh, that's
he hears too much scream, crying. The scream in the woods. He's like, get it out, son. Which I like to think would have been his same response if he knew that it was him having sex with Jennifer with Jennifer in the woods. Get it out, son.
He goes to check and finds the body, there's a deer also eating some of the remains.
As deer do.
I mean, he was salty. The extended cut gives us a great moment that we don't get in the regular edition, where Bill Fagerbeck, who plays Dauber on Coach and is the voice of Patrick Starr. He's the football coach, and Jonas is his son, and he's just screaming about how he's gonna like find who did it and tear their balls off and nail them to a wall. So if you just imagine Patrick Starr screaming. We were denied that in the
regular edition. There's no footage of this anywhere, because I kind of need.
Oh, no, it's on the extended footage. You can find it. It got like briefly memed on. Just people discovered it. Like, wait, this was cut. Why?
Why did this hit the cutting room floor?
Everything else is pretty much like centered around like what's going on in school. We get like occasional check-ins with Sausen. I mean, Low Shoulder. And they're like gaining more popularity. They're like Through the Trees song is a memorial to the tragic fire, and they're donating 3% of their record sales.
Right. You hear on the radio that you know, they were there at this fire, and they witnesses at the scene saw them helping people out. So they're heroes as well as a band that's rising in popularity.
Another minor character is introduced. Do you have strong feelings one way or the other about Amy Sedaris as a performer? were you like, a Strangers with Candy fan?
I recognize her when I see her, but like I don't have a lot of I guess nostalgia for what she does.
What she brings to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm never mad when she shows up. I'm just sort of like, oh, we're doing that character again, huh? that's the one.
She's fine. She is the kind of mom that you would expect in this sort of place.
Yeah, the Ford Tough mama bear, like the year after Sarah Palin. That's pretty on the nose. But she's like, I think the only thing that they really like kind of establish with her is that Needy doesn't have a lot of money. She doesn't have a lot of means. There's no dad around. And right. That also like her mom's out of the house working a lot. Like,
yeah. So they don't say, but you can probably infer multiple jobs.
Yeah. Jennifer celebrates her renewed vigor, because we find out that she's like eating these boys, like, brings her back. She starts to fade, and then like it, she pops once she's consumed. Swimming in the naked in the lake to the sword. That's a bold. It's a big swing there.
Yeah, no, it's I don't hate it.
I guess she was had a beige swimsuit, so she wasn't actually nude, but yeah. they found like paparazzi folks like trying to sneak on set and take nude photos. They figured out this was the day of shooting.
Shame.
But she's communicating with Needy, and like Needy's like, you know, concerned about her, also is taking like a call from Chip, and maybe one of my favorite visuals in this movie, as Jennifer is talking to her on the phone and like trying to, you know, maintain her friendship as she's like renewed and tell her like how great she feels and mm-hmm. why aren't you happy for me that I feel this good, while she's on hold, just takes out her lighter and like burns her tongue.
Yeah,
just to see what happens.
It
just for fine. The sensation. pretty cool effect.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Before we get like the signature, it's in the craft, it's in Ginger Snaps, we get the hot girl hallway walk. How does this hot girl hallway walk rank for you?
you're asking me as though I have like a list prepared and I could slot this in somewhere. I mean, it is that.
The slow motion hot girl hallway walk. It's, you know, it's the thing. This teenage girl has come into herself. She's feeling her power. But we get like the jump to a month later, we now find out that the Imagine Dragons is doing even better. I think we talked a little bit about this scene that they didn't help at the fire, and like they're called Needy is called into question because it's on the Wikipedia.
Right. Yeah. Like, no, they wouldn't just put that on there.
They're editors. Jennifer starts to ask about Chip a little bit. She also is approached and asked out by Colin, who she's not interested in at all, until Needy is like, no, he's actually a good guy. I like him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's when she goes in for the kill. I think that's when, like, you start to kind of get that, like, oh no, like, I need all of your attention. Like, you don't get to like other folks. You don't get to say other people are cool.
Right.
So Jennifer's chosen her next victim. Jennifer's kill of Colin here, asking him out on this date to this house that she doesn't live at, like a under construction harp with house with, you know, plastic tarp down.
Yeah, there's it's just stuck on Jennifer's the inside. Part. It's not finished. there's no way in.
But this is like cross cut with Needy and Chip, because you know Chip's gone to the Super Target and bought some condoms. and I don't. I think this is kind of positioned like maybe it's their first time. He is like a sweet boy, and this is like a sweet lead up to the sex scene. But it's like I think it's kind of telling that like all the Jennifer stuff is both like cooler, more fun, more like more movement, more interesting. And Needy and Jennifer's later like kiss scene later on is also much more intimate and passionate and not played nearly as much for laughs as like right. Chip's just like bopping his little butt up and down in the sheets, and then
am I too big?
I kind of like how they play him, how he's like he's a genuinely good and sweet guy who's just
right.
A bit of a dip, like a
dip. He is. I mean, I could see myself as that in high school.
Yeah, no, I definitely see some of my earnest goofiness in Chip too. Like not realizing like what I'm saying really. But during the sex scene, the stuff with Jennifer's going down where she's doing her same, just like hypersexual, like let's play mommy and daddy in this house. When you know Colin being the more sensitive boy, I think, than Jonas, is just like, this doesn't seem right with me.
Yeah, he basically says, do you even know my last name?
Before, like, I think Jennifer can be a really sympathetic character. And I think really her killing of Colin and then later with Chip, that's kind of what's pushing us into like the monster territory. Like I think they play a lot with this too, like in Ginger Snaps again, like going back to Ginger, but I think like it, them being sisters and them being like both weirdo outsiders is just like a different relationship. I feel like it's a different kind of, works a little bit differently than the kind of this friendship you've chosen. I don't know how to explain their psychic link where she just knows.
Oh, good, because I was going to bring that up if you didn't bring it up. This is not the first time it's come into play, but it's definitely probably the most prominent place where you see it.
Yeah, where we get a little bit of a American Werewolf in London situation where she's seeing like demon Jennifer and like and Jonas while she's having sex with Chip, and she has to leave. She knows something's going down. She like homes in on where Jennifer's at, finds a bloody Jennifer after Jennifer not just kills Colin, but that's like an extended horrible death scene where it's like, I need you hopeless. I need you afraid.
Yeah.
And slowly eating him to pieces in shadow.
Like breaking his bones and tearing him apart while he's alive.
That I think, what is he described as later? Like lasagna with teeth?
Yes.
When they find him. But she and Jennifer have an encounter because Jennifer, she almost hits her with a car, and then Jennifer breaks the windshield. That seems a bad friend move.
Yeah.
If that's the play that Jennifer's going for later.
I mean, she's coming off of a high, man. Give her a break.
She goes home and finds Jennifer's beating her back home and is in her bed, just like when we used to sleep over. And they kind of explore their physical feelings for each other. And even though this is like, I think, was used to sell dudes to get in the seats, like, this doesn't feel like, oh, these two girls are going to kiss and they're going to come over to me.
No.
You come over to any moment now.
I mean, there is a certain amount of, wow, this is hot, but it's also, yes, it is more about these two characters where they are, not like you said, like, oh, this is, I can see myself in there. There's no room for someone else there.
Yeah, this is like, this is filmed so much differently than Needy's sex scene with Chip, where it's like the close up and like they, it's funny because like, I think because people like obsess on this, everything I was reading about this scene was like all different. It was like in this interview, they said like that they had a great time doing it and they loved it and they felt more chemistry with each other than anybody else. And this other interview is like they really didn't want to do it. They were really like Amanda Seyfried was super nervous about it. And it's just like I don't know how much of that is like people just thinking about it too much and how much of that is like maybe they just wanted to fuck with people who kept asking them about the scene. So there'd be like 10 different stories out there.
I can totally see that. Because you have to know when you're doing something like that, you have to know, especially, and maybe this is me being presumptuous, but I would say that a woman in that position has to know the kind of response that something like that is going to engender. And they want to have any sort of control over the narrative. You know, they probably have different ways of handling it.
Yeah. The other thing that's important here is after they kind of like break off and Needy's just like, no, I need to like, I need to know what's up. And Jennifer's like, you're my best friend. I'm not going to keep any secrets from you. Jennifer relays the events that of that night. And basically says that like we get an extended flashback scene where she's in the van with Mumford and all of his sons. And they head out to the actual Devil's Kettle. You know, they're being very disparaging of her the entire time, just like it's okay if you don't talk, and
yeah, you don't have to say anything, just that's not what you're here for.
They get her to this rock that's by the Devil's Kettle, tie her up, and basically talk about how they're gonna kill her for Satan, because that's the only way that an indie band can make it if you're not on a soundtrack or on Letterman.
Exactly. This is I really enjoyed this scene. I thought it was very fun and playful.
But I think the thing that makes it really work is it's fun and playful for all of them, and they're playing it as comedy. Megan Fox and Jennifer is not playing this for comedy. She is like absolutely terrified and is stabbed as they're singing the 867-5309. And like our you know, the one guy who has reservations is like, well, hey, do you want to work at this coffee shop all for the rest of your life, or do you want to be the guy from Maroon 5?
The guy from Maroon 5. Yeah, I thought the scene was really, really well, done and really funny.
Yeah. So they split up here. She you know, asks her to leave, and Jennifer's just like, I'll, you know, whatever, see you. Jumps out the window.
Yeah, she said I had to go.
But we find this like basically what has happened to her as what's something I love in movies, characters doing research in the library. I do like that they call it out. Like it's not a big library.
It's the high school library. I don't think she goes to like the town library. I think she's just at school.
But she finds out about succubuses and finds out that because Jennifer wasn't a virgin, the ceremony still worked. So Low Shoulder got what they wanted, but instead of dying. What's that?
A demon was able to come back.
Yeah, the demon was able to come back and inhabit Jennifer and basically turn her into a succubus. She tries to, get Chip on board. Hey, like, she's evil. I know. No, like, not high school evil, actual evil. They break up. Can't go to the dance with you. I'm not going to go to the Cheesecake Factory. We're not doing that. The end game of this movie. I don't know. I feel like this part gets a little bit blurrier for me, but I think there's still bits of it I like.
I don't necessarily understand or agree with the logic that Needy takes here, that the prom is going to be an all-you-can-eat buffet. Like, that hasn't been the way she operates at all up to this point. I don't know why she would just choose the prom to go to an all-you-can-eat buffet.
I mean, maybe just the idea that if, like, somebody went by themselves, or if they went and, like, didn't, like, they thought they were going as a romantic partner and they find out right. they were going as friends or something, that's, like, prime Jennifer territory. But then she creates that herself by dumping Chip. Yes,
exactly, yeah.
So Chip is still going to go to the dance, and Jennifer hones in on him, uses the same trick. Needy's at the dance just to kind of incognito to keep an eye out and finding people that look like maybe Jennifer, when she also finds out that the even at their school dance, who's showing up to play? Well, it's Beirut themselves. I'm gonna run out of like shitty indie bands from the mid 2000s here at some point, right?
I think they're kind of bottomless.
Chip's intercepted by Jennifer, and like again, Jennifer's like, she knows the mind games to play with people. She knows
I want to say one thing before we get into that. I think it's really weird that they let him just walk by himself to the prom.
After his mom specifically gave him Lady Mace?
Yes. When they know that there have been high school boys who have been killed. And I don't know. I just, that reaction rang false to me. But I know it's a movie and things have to happen.
Jennifer intercepts Chip and is like, hey, like picks up on the jealousy that he had about Colin, and says that, you know, before Colin died, the reason Needy's so broken up is that they were intimate with each other. They were doing varsity level stuff.
Right.
Rusty trombones, angry pirates, remixes by Skrillex, eating the devil's tapas.
Yeah.
The Kentucky Gentleman.
No, those are all good.
Crop circles.
That one I haven't.
Sloppy done. Scallops. All of it. All that real stuff.
Not made up of.
Then they go to the pool from It Follows.
Is it the same pool?
No, I don't think it is. It's just a derelict pool they filled with vegetation and had a miserable time filming in. Chip makes out with Jennifer a little bit because, you know, the Megan Fox of it all. But he does like say like, hey, no, actually not into this, before he's attacked by Jennifer. Needy comes running, finds the corsage, and makes the save. Comes with a
I mean,
flying of shoulder off the off the side of the pool.
Save is in air quotes there.
The bottom 3 more minutes of life.
Screen time.
I do love like this like fight in the pool, and then as they're going to get out, Jennifer just starts like floating above the pool. It's like, what the crap, she can fly? She's just levitating.
Yeah, all right, that was funny. It's just not that impressive. She's just levitating.
She's just hovering.
Right.
But Chip's pretty messed up. Chip's got a big old bite in his neck. Yeah. We get a little bit of the Chekhov's Lady Mace there. She gets sprayed in the face before she barfs up some more Hershey syrup. Uh-huh. And we got our final confrontation here between two, where they kind of lay everything out on the table, and like Needy is able to get in some good digs at good old Jennifer here with like when Jennifer's just like, I was the snowflake queen, like, yeah, 2 years ago when you were relevant. Mm-hmm. Which, like, you know, live by being hot, die by being hot. That's the
time marches on.
Washed up at 18. Have we seen like a wimpier weapon used on like a final monster than the pool skimmer? I mean, it's like an impalement with it, but like
it's impressive.
Yeah, I don't know how. I've held many a pool skimmer. I don't know how I would push that through somebody without it just crumbling in on itself.
I've never hoisted one of those things that, you know what? I bet I could really get this into somebody. I mean, certainly not in any place that there wasn't already a hole.
Is there stuff about this confrontation here that you want to call out too? I mean, we definitely do get them like kind of laying into each other, and
I like that we kind of get the whole Needy kind of coming to grips with the fact that she doesn't need Jennifer. I think Jennifer's never been a good friend to her. I don't know. The dialogue just kind of sours it a little bit. I mean, particularly on Jennifer's end.
Her like invent, but I think like that's also I think part of her character. I think that's kind of what I was trying to say earlier, is that like I think Jennifer, her talking like that is like, I can get away with talking like this, people will copy me.
Right.
I feel clever and fun and smart because I'm like I think it's really character based, which I do like. I think a lot of Needy's is like the stuff, because she doesn't really like swear, but she has like the same cadence a bit, and like sense of humor, the Vagisil Monistat stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess if I look at it that way, it's not as jarring. I don't know. I just.
Yeah, I mean, part of it's just Diablo Cody. That's just how she writes. Which, I mean, maybe works for you or it doesn't. I kind of like movies that operate with that. I mean, I like Brick a lot. I like the kind of stylized language that sort of, like, maybe creates a little distance, but it also, like, creates the world of the movie in some way with just, like, dialogue, with just spoken word.
No, I mean, I can't think of an example of when I've seen a movie that does this sort of stuff that I like. Like, nothing is leaping to mind. I don't think it necessarily is a bad thing on its face. I just think that this particular version of it does not really.
Yeah, like. You named a couple earlier. You mentioned like Clueless and Mean Girls. Like, I think that's also like
All right.
Similar ballparky type stuff. But Jennifer escapes. Chip dies. We get his tragic death scene.
I thought his death scene was kind of sweet when he says, I think I actually died a couple minutes ago, but I came back when I heard your voice. I thought that was kind of a sweet line.
Yeah. I think it'd be real easy to not give this character a lot of dignity in this movie, but he's a genuinely good dude, and like it's Needy is absolutely crushed that he dies, and like, you know, maybe Needy would go to college and like figure some stuff out about herself and no longer be interested in a chip. But
yeah, no. But I mean, definitely, like, this is the inciting incident that you could see leading to the needy that's at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And she goes back to Jennifer's house. We go back to the beginning of the movie. Attacks her with a box cutter.
I don't like that joke.
cross you out.
You know why it's called a box cutter?
It's open boxes.
Yeah. Don't like it.
But I think it's also kind of cool here that, like, the thing that does Jennifer in is that Needy, because she can easily overpower her, but Needy pulls off her BFF necklace.
Right.
And that's like, yeah. breaks her heart long enough for her to get stabbed in the tit. You mean the heart. But this leads to the, like, at the beginning, that's why people think she's a murderer, because, like, Jennifer's mom comes in and just finds with a knife on top of her body.
She is a murderer.
Yeah.
she did a murder.
demons don't count, Jed. It's frailty rules. Sorry, spoilers for frailty. But we go back to our intro. We're back in our frame story that we've reached the beginning. And we find out that part of, like, if you hadn't already figured it out, that Needy has gotten some of Jennifer's powers. Like, that's why, you know, 105-pound Amanda Seyfried's able to, like, kick a woman twice her size across the room.
Yeah.
And you know, punch a tetherball off. Man, that's Hulk strength.
I'm not sure that qualifies as an example.
She's able to float up in her cell, and she's able to escape. Lance Henriksen's in this movie.
Right, didn't see that coming either.
She's chiking, and Lance Henriksen picks her up. She says she's following a band. Cue credits. And then this credit death scene for all the members of Dirty Projectors. Does this wrap up work for you? This, like, how it is, it's the hotel footage and the, like, kind of the snapshots and the party footage. And
I was disappointed when it seemed to be ending on her just going to where they are. I was glad to see that we got some closure there. I'm still kind of left in the lurch about where does this go from here?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really feel like it ended. It.
Yeah, like, what she—I mean, I guess it's she's an independent. She's got that bit of Jennifer in her now, that confidence. Yeah.
She can float, but not that impressive, but she can.
So I think we've been talking about this one for a while. You ready to march up onto the sales floor here?
I think so.
Okay. I think a lot of this pitch, and I'm kind of wondering where you're at, like, specifically in regard to a movie that I've mentioned a few times. I have a feeling, I think I knew up front that if we were talking Karin Kusama movies, that you would like The Invitation more than you like this movie. I like this one slightly more than I like The Invitation. I think more as an example of, like, something we don't really see explored, especially, like, in this time in movies a lot, is sort of this, like, high school friendship dynamic and kind of like, right. a movie like, you know, made for teenage girls without, like, and I think a victim of a lot of the shit that was made for teenage girls at the time. Like, I don't really love Twilight, but I think, like, there's a lot of shitty teenage boy movies that get, like, prestige things made about them, or, like, mm-hmm. held up as, like, cultural touchstones without, like, fear of reprisal. Right. Like,
they really don't deserve it.
Yeah, like, that I feel like people were just shittier about it, and that's just the, you know, existence in a patriarchy for a long time. But I think this explores that dynamic. I think it's a really fun movie. I think it pops really well. I hate doing the crispy not where the crispy goes thing, but, like, Megan Fox, man. Like, we done her dirty. Like, I need to give her her flowers. Like, this movie does not work without the it girl. And I think, like, as much as I like a lower budget Canadian version of this, like in Ginger Snaps, I think, no offense to Catherine Isabel, who's phenomenal in Ginger Snaps, but she's not the it girl of the culture when it's made. And I think that gives it like a context that's kind of like, I don't want to say like not replicable, but I don't think there's really too many meaningful feminist horror movies like this using the Maxim pinup girl of the moment.
Yeah, I think Ginger Snaps wouldn't have worked with an it girl though, because that's not like what those
characters. That's not how it starts. Yeah, like it she turns into the it girl of the school. Yeah. It's a different thing. I think I'm just using that as a reference point because that's like there's a lot of overlap in like the target messaging and like tone and tenor of the movies. That's also another movie that had a lot of like kind of biting at the Heather's apple dialogue in it, the out by 16 or dead in the scene. Yeah, I'm curious if I've picked one that way, because that's the only one, and I think I'm very mindful of this, that got a bad vote that got switched to a good vote. So I'm curious where we land here, and if it's a final vote. I don't know.
I want to come back to Ginger Snaps for a second just before we go. I think my stance on that movie has I think I look back on it much more fondly now than immediately following the viewing.
After all the shit you've shown me since.
No. I mean, I think my stance on it has definitely changed. And I think, you know, the fact that I turned it from a not sale to a sale indicates that. But yeah. I think I enjoy that more with distance and time from it than I did maybe immediately following. But that being said, I think you may have an idea of what I'm going to say. But I'm going to say that this is a sale for me. I like this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. Even if I did not like the dialogue, I probably will not watch it again. I think that there is a better version of this movie that could be made. I'm not trying to take away anything from, you know, the person who wrote it and the person who directed it. I don't think that they did a bad job per se. But I think there is a way to do this story in maybe even a more thoughtful way it feels less like all the other movies that were coming out around the time this movie came out.
Yeah, I think a lot of the reviews at the time, even like a lot of the negative ones, would single out things that they liked. It just kind of created like, you know, a 50% Rotten Tomato scores on a movie that I think is like maybe a little bit more thoughtful and more deserving of that. So, sure. I mean, I understand it. I think you're kind of maybe where Roger Ebert was, which is like, I don't know, not a bad place to be. That guy knew stuff about movies, right?
I mean, it's hard to really put words to it. Because I don't think that this movie is great. Like, I don't think it's an all-timer or anything like that. But it does. I think part of it is the cast. We talked about how Megan Fox pops. I think you're right that this version of this movie does not work without her in it.
Yeah.
But I think there is a version of this story that could be told with someone else in that role that could be potentially better than this. Not that they would ever like to just retell this story, but
remake a movie that famously flopped.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they made a sequel to Blade Runner, so who knows?
I'm not going to entertain the comparison between those two movies.
Well, let's talk a little bit about next time. Sure. I've got something heading out in the mail your way, because this movie and is not really available anywhere anymore, not just to like stream for free, which is sometimes the bar that I don't want to cross, like paying anything for it, but like you can't buy this through any streaming service or rent it. We're gonna do 28 Days Later, like you know, she goes to rehab, she meets Viggo Mortensen, they hit it off, and then terrible. And then 28 days later after that, you know, they encounter rage virus zombies. this movie was a game changer. This was kind of like the movie that relaunched zombies as being like a craze.
Did this come for out the next 20-something years? The Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead?
Oh, before that.
Okay.
We'll get into it on that episode, but I'm real excited to talk about it. I'm even more excited to talk about the reason why you cannot get it anywhere, because it has to do with Canadian post-rock legends Godspeed You Black Emperor. So we'll just
can't wait to talk about that.
Before we get to business stuff, is there anything you wanted to shout out, anything you've been enjoying? I know you sometimes dry up here, but you know, gotta give it to the people if you got it.
Yeah, if I got it, I'll give it to them. I don't have a whole lot. I haven't been watching anything. I hesitate to like recommend like video games. Now I know that like they're a big business and everyone loves video games and blah 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 blah. This is me in my own head. I hate sounding like that kind of nerd, but I am that kind of nerd. So whatever.
I hate sounding like it, but it's me.
Yeah, fuck it. There's a game from I recommend this to you before. I'm going to recommend it actually on the podcast now, called Wildermyth. From it came out last year, the year before. I think the game is really good. I've jumped back into it since I talked to you about it last week before, whatever that was. I don't know. It's a strategy RPG, kind of like a Final Fantasy Tactics or something along those lines. It has a lot of procedural stuff in it, particularly the storytelling. I think the writing in it's really good. I dig the art style. It's kind of illustrated like an old time. I mean, not like a medieval manual, but it's kind of supposed to feel like you're looking at a pop up book kind of while you're playing it. I think it's really solid mechanically. I think the writing is really where it shines though, and I think it needs a little more love than it's got.
I'll just give a brief shout out to, I enjoy the podcast all the time, but there was a 4-part series that they just did recently that is like expressly my jam, is Behind the Bastards, the, Robert Evans from Cracked, his podcast, where he gets people on and talks about like the history of like history's greatest monsters or whatever, or sometimes like organizations, or like how a certain idea got it that's very harmful got out into society. But he did a 4-part series recently on the history of the Illuminati and just sort of like that whole conspiracy and like where that sprung up. If you're like interested in like cults and secret society stuff, that's kind of like fascinating for me. It's a hell of a listen. Just how much this like bullshit kind of con scam took on a life of its own and started like influencing the real world in all the dumb bullshit ways that were made up by putting the idea of this secret society out into the world. It's really something.
I'm gonna look that one up now, because that sounds like something that I'd be interested in as well, because it does.
Right. But yeah, business stuff. Please join our Facebook group. Please reach out to us on the propped up scarecrow remains of Twitter.
Gotta find a better way.
at Scream Selling.
My Facebook group. Can't you make like smoke signals?
I refuse to join Mastodon. I will not do it. I will not put a toot into the universe. I do that enough on my own. Thank you very much. It doesn't need to be online.
I was going to call you on it, but you caught yourself.
Our email is sellingthescream@gmail.com. It's a real dusty place these days. I'd appreciate it. Any sort of correspondence, any erotic fan art of the two of us. I'd be thrilled to find that there.
It's fine. I'll take it.
If you could, please leave us a review on the podcast, the podcasting service of your choice. Spotify and iTunes drive the most traffic. I always get these updates, and sometimes they're really complicated for the iOS agreement for negative reviews. Have you noticed that they're like complicated and they change a lot?
I don't normally look at it. I just take your word for it, but you're trustworthy. I believe it.
I trust me. But yeah, here it just says if you're going to leave a negative review, shutties.
I mean, what else do you say? There's no coming back from that.
I mean, especially like if someone as hot as Megan Fox or myself is saying it to you.
Right. Two are the same.
I am the Megan Fox of podcasting.
Certainly of this podcast.
Many have said that. Until then, join us for 28 days later next time. Try to find it by hook or by crook. You can find it fairly cheaply used at most places that have DVDs. You just can't stream it. It's not available online.
Good luck.
But until bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, thank you.